Man, after a 3-hour extravaganza like that, I must say I'm quite spent.
Oh
yeah.
Are you? Or do you need to do some coke?
Well, you know,
and then even out with some Quaaludes.
How about some hookers?
And the hookers. Yeah. You can't forget the hookers.
Yeah, you can never forget the hookers.
I never bought a gigantic popcorn and a gigantic drink at one time until
a
movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it felt good. I needed it.
Yeah.
But about, I don't know, like halfway through the movie, I was like, oh, I'm so fucking done eating this popcorn. Right? I put the popcorn down, and I just put my hands like between my legs, and there was like a mountain of popcorn on my dick, as if I had fed my whole groin some more.
Oh.
Like, and I think I threw popcorn at you by accident, because I was like shoveling this like I had just came out of prison. No. They don't have popcorn in prison.
Oh,
that's what I learned.
Not
from this
even
movie.
The federal prisons,
the rich ones. Oh, yeah,
hey, that they had. They were doing Tai Chi out there, and they had a damn tennis court.
Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
We're living the wrong way.
I feel like Lubbock is more of a prison than federal prison.
Yeah, I bet that prison has more tennis courts than Lubbock does.
It does. They have more than one.
Yeah. But anyway, everybody, welcome to another episode of Two Bros One Flick. Andy and Sam here, as always.
What's good?
How's it going, Mr. A?
Hey man, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
2013, kiss my ass.
Exactly, man. Yeah. Anyway, so we went to go see Wolf of Wall Street. That technically came out on Christmas Day of last year. I gave Mr. A call while I was buying enough Ziplocs to last me the nuclear holocaust at Sam's.
Hey man, you gotta have those sandwich bags. You never know when you're gonna make a sandwich.
I'm not gonna ask what you use them for.
Yeah. Poop wine. Just poop wine. This is fermented in my toilet. Yeah, but I gave you the call, man, and it was...
And I answered the call.
You answered the call of duty, and he said, dude, we have
call
to go
duty.
See this. I liked it so much. Andy, I'll go see it with you guys again. And that's always a strong endorsement for Mr. A. So, Sam, why don't you give us the rundown? And then after the rundown from Sam, I will bring it over to Mr. A and see what drew him to this movie originally as a consummate Scorsese freak that I know you are, Mr. A. Does that sound good?
Oh, yeah, that sounds fine, man.
Perfect. Let's do it.
Cool. So basically what this film is about, it's based on a true story. I didn't do as much research on the actual guy as much as Andy did.
Uh-huh.
But from what I understand... in the mid-late 80s, there was this big boom in Wall Street over these things called penny stocks, which are basically really shitty companies. And the main character's name is Jordy. Is kind of a shyster, and he tricked a bunch of people into buying these penny stocks for lots and lots of money and then basically defrauded them. And the story is about that character, his rise and fall, his coming to power and his... eventual loss of all of that. So,
right.
I think that's pretty.
I think it's a classic story of greed and the downfall of a character. Unique in the sense that it's a 3-hour movie and there's no real redemption at the end. But we'll get into that later. Mr. A, what drew you to this motion picture?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you first introduced the movie. But Martin Scorsese is one of my favorite film directors, probably my most favorite.
Uh-huh.
And going to a Scorsese movie is just like going into it would be like going to a Super Bowl. I mean, each one is a big event because he doesn't make a whole lot of movies and it takes 4 or 5 years before he does his next one because he always does something, always shoots some documentary on the Rolling Stones or the Beatles something.
Yeah.
And then he decides to make a feature film. So that was the main reason. And plus, you got a fucking dynamite cast. You got Leonardo DiCaprio, of course. I think this is his sixth collaboration with Martin Scorsese. You got Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
You got people like
Rob Reiner. Spike Jones. This movie really stars Spike Jones in a
he's
major
in there for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think the story is something that's very timely for the times. As Sam mentioned, this is about a huckster on Wall Street who just fucks over a lot of people. And I think the country is very familiar with that story in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would have to say, I'll say that question. Actually, I'll pose the question to you now, and I'll hear your answer at the end when we do our ratings. But I was going to see where you put this in the pantheon of Scorsese movies.
So man, that's a hard question. I got
to
think about that.
They're going to have to think about
it's
that
a tough
one.
Sell.
Yeah. But that movie was 3 hours long.
Fastest 3 hours in history.
This podcast could fucking go on for that long, considering how much... This podcast could go on for 6 hours, considering what we just watched.
There's so much material in the movie. There's so much that actually occurs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess I would have to think, like... When this movie first came out, I was at home, you know, as all of us were basically on Christmas Day. My sister's telling me about, you know, I just read this article on the New York Times. Basically, someone did an op-ed piece, and I don't know if we necessarily agree with it now that I've seen the movie, right? But it's how are you going to glorify these characters that essentially frauded, at first, really poor people out of their money?
Yeah.
And then the second time, maybe people who they won't part ways with $10,000 or so. That won't be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Right? But you go and you take this guy who did all this. He has an incredible story nonetheless, but now he's like palling around with all these Hollywood types, going to Las Vegas with Leonardo DiCaprio and just like hanging out and having a good time.
Yeah.
As if there's no consequence.
Yeah.
Right? So I think some people have an issue with that. Right. And I was just curious what you guys think about that. And before I guess I let it go back out, I'll just say that this guy is probably an unrelenting dick. The guy who is the character and the real life character.
Well, his character. Yeah. His character is like that in the movie, too.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about this glorification, if you will?
I didn't know that he even assisted in the movie making to that extent. Like, I thought it was just something like, hey, they're like, hey, kind of, could you give
Martin
us a rundown?
Scorsese, you got to meet this guy. He's a great public speaker, and oh my God, he blew me away.
That's sort of a dick move, yeah.
Right. So that's it's not... interesting.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting take. I don't necessarily agree that maybe that this is a glorification of Jordan Belfort's lifestyle and what he did. I think what the movie... And I didn't read the article, but I think what the movie does, it shows the excesses of his lifestyle.
Sure.
And it's funny because all of these people are just extremely horrible people making extremely horrible choices. And we have to laugh because what other choice
is
there?
It's cartoonish, yeah.
But what other choice is there? Either exactly. We laugh or we cry. And yeah. I think the way they wanted to see, the way they wanted to portray the film is that these people were so bad.
Uh-huh.
And the things that they did so bad. You know, we can't help but laugh because that's the only response that we have other than kind of crawling into a shell of depression.
Yeah.
I think Scorsese does a good job at making it, putting it in that light, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like he's lampooning these assholes.
This could be exactly the same thing as, like, what was it, PBS has that, it's kind of like their version of 60 Minutes.
Frontline.
But it could have been the exact same thing of, like, Frontline when they did their Enron piece. Right.
Yeah. Or when they did the Wall Street, the whole piece on Madoff.
The Madoff piece. All of that, you could easily turn this story into something like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's what the New York Times took issue with, was with like, you could either go in there and just watch a documentary and be like, can you fucking believe these people?
Yeah. They
could
have made like a pseudo like kind of like Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
It was shot to be sort of like a documentary, really ultra realistic, but instead.
You take it like this, it's an interesting dark comedy, I think.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and on the same token, I mean, you know, Scorsese deals with people like this. I mean, he made a movie, Goodfellas, about a guy that comes up in the mob. Are we supposed to say that he's glorifying that lifestyle?
Yeah, no one comes out of Goodfellas thinking that the main character, Ray Liotta, is a good guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think Goodfellas is, they do a better job in this one. This one, in this movie, I'm not so sure people thought it was like, you know, wow, can you believe this guy? And not till the very end, I think, is when you see some dark shit, like when he hits his wife or when he...
What I thought was... When he brags
about going to rich prison.
Yeah, when he was talking about the dark stuff, I was reading review and basically they were like, oh, I didn't like the last third because it got really dark. But I actually really liked the last third because that's when... You know, the state gets vindicated. I wanted the FBI guy to win the entire time.
That's a ridiculous critique because each third of the movie, it starts off dark and it just keeps going that way.
It's sort of like a wave. It's not really like it's super happy and then at the end it gets dark. It's
well,
like a lot
a
of different stuff
like
happens.
This, you could bring this back to fucking Goodfellas any day, just going back right when the cops come in, they're flushing everything down the toilet. Right?
Yeah.
That scene is Jonah Hill hitting delete, enter.
Yeah,
because
he doesn't
flush.
Because he doesn't know macros, like
right?
A smart boy.
So that's the thing. It's like the same trajectory. You assume it's going to happen. I thought it was well done for seeing it in a million other movies.
Yeah, that was really good.
So this whole issue of greed and glorifying it, you guys don't really have a problem with it, as long as
I think it's the perspective from which you're looking at the movie. Because I think. like for us when we're watching it, yeah, Scorsese's kind of glorifying the greed. He's showing you all, you know, like the ridiculous Lamborghinis and like the huge house and all that stuff. But the point of showing you that is to contrast it with the character's downfall. It's like this guy is not a good guy. Mm-hmm. Horrible things are happening to him. None of this is good. So like it's kind of like you know, when people say like be careful what you wish for because you might get it. It's sort of like that because he got what he wished for, but it all kind of came around to bite him in the ass.
Yeah, and just like that, I was going to say, at what costs? Yeah. At what cost? Yeah, yeah. He had all of this great stuff. He had all these, this great home. He had a great-looking wife. He was making...
I think he had two great-looking wives, too, yeah.
Yeah, he was making...
When he was having sex with the new one, I was like, you could have kept your old one, and she wasn't half bad, man.
No, she was pretty bad. She looked like Cher from Moonstruck.
I love ladies in windsuits.
Do you like Moonstruck? So you just want to watch Moonstruck?
Long, stringy hair?
Yeah, I just want a Cher lookalike, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Scorsese at the very end, and I think he's asking us throughout the entire movie, at what cost?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, guys, I really don't think the cost was too much at the end. At what cost?
Oh,
he's still running around as a motivational speaker.
But no, it's to I think in part it's to show you like this guy is empty. Like there's nothing really.
He was a piece of shit at the beginning.
Yeah, like this is a piece of shit. Like yeah, he's doing okay, but like he's lost his kids, he's lost his wife, he has no family, he doesn't really have people he can trust anymore. He lost all of his friends.
He's also a fucking snitch too. At the same time, yeah. So this guy is very unlikable.
Yeah, he's a rat. So like it's not like. Scorsese's like, this is a good example of a person. Even though he might have money, he's lost everything else.
He's still a dirtbag.
Yeah.
And I think there's a line in the movie that I thought was particularly poignant, and I don't know if a lot of people picked up on it, but it's during one of the sales pitches.
Uh-huh.
And Leonardo DiCaprio says something like, Stratton Oakmont is America.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, before that you see all these... Hookers come in there. Their people are having sex in the goddamn office.
Throwing midgets around,
doing blow off of a hooker's ass.
Yeah,
I mean, I think Scorsese at the end, you know, even though Jordan Belfort is doing the same old shit that he was doing before, he's now doing it in like a self-help seminar bullshit stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He's like,
this is our fucking culture, guys. Yeah. This is our society. And then, you know, we are complicit in making people like
this.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a good podcast.
Yeah, I agree. It is absolutely Scorsese kind of turning the camera around on the viewer. Definitely, yeah.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, that's going to be one of my critiques too.
Okay.
I think, by and large, you guys enjoyed this movie more than I did. But I like the movie. I think I have a problem with mixed messages as well as mixed pacing.
Oh,
which goes with a three-hour movie.
Yeah.
It comes with the territory.
Yeah, it's
it is a fast 3 hours.
Yeah.
Sam made a joke in the car that I was about the director's cut is going to be...
5 hours long,
like
probably.
5 hours long. It's gonna be like Showa.
Or like or like fucking Blade Runner, where it's gonna have like 20 different releases.
Yeah. But this movie, I think, gets a little lost with kind of like the moral. And it's not like this movie is like, oh, how cool. They don't glorify it at all, I think.
Yeah.
But I think with people watching it, they can get too carried away and be like, wow, this guy did it and did it right. Right? And think about... Essentially, you can go with two routes. Like, he's an asshole, or you can just be like,
What a cool guy. What a badass for doing all this shit. Yeah.
What a salesman. He can sell you.
I agree.
Pen. Sell me this fucking pen.
I agree.
Right? And if they ended it in a different way, but what Sam said that, say you wanted more ending, right?
I wanted just like a line more, like maybe just have one guy that says something like, I got a check for you, and all you have to do is sign it.
Yeah.
Just needed something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it would have kind of brought it all around. You know?
Well, that's what I was waiting for.
Yeah.
And I think he didn't do that. I think he specifically didn't make that happen on purpose.
No, yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I just wish he had done that. Because I think that would have rounded the movie out.
Well, especially
in a movie
like this where it's not something... I don't think it's a very heady movie in terms of how much brain power you have to use to watch it.
Yeah, no. The movie is continuously condescending.
And it's very heavy-handed.
Yeah.
It's
ham-fisted.
I've seen I've seen more Scorsese movies with more...
tact.
Moral ambiguity and you know, not having a beat over the head with, you know... Like,
Raging Bull.
Raging Bull.
Raging Bull is like the opposite of this movie.
In terms of the character,
but in terms of how the message of the character is portrayed on screen.
Well, I mean, at the end of Raging Bull, he's a fat son of a bitch just in the dressing room.
Yeah.
He's having to go out and do this stand-up comedy stuff that You know, he's just a shadow of his former self.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Goodfellas, I mean, I think it's kind of in the same vein as Goodfellas in that Henry Hill didn't learn his lesson, nor did Jordan Belfort. They're Henry Hill at the area says, I feel sorry for this because I'm having to eat egg noodles with tomato ketchup, and I feel like a snook for having to do that.
Yeah. I think there are lots of parallels to be made in the third act of both Goodfellas.
But you know what? I think Martin Scorsese, he's kind of earned his keep as a filmmaker. He's like, you know what? I'm 76 fucking years old. You know, I can make the movie I want, and if people want to harp on me, that's fine. And if you feel like I went excessive, well, you know, this is my movie.
That's his goal.
That's his artistic license,
right? Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, watching this, knowing how shitty this person is, it wasn't necessarily a mixed message to me because, you know, it's like these people are jokes. Everything going on is almost
unreal.
I think that's one of the problems when you have, you know, Martin Scorsese started making movies during the American New Wave of movie making. I mean, we had ambiguity in characters and ambiguity in plot, and it required the audience to actually be really engaging intellectually with what's going on. Now, Andy, I will concede the point that this doesn't take a whole lot of firepower, but it does try to say, look, this is what's going on here. Where is your moral fiber as you're watching all of this? And I don't think the contemporary American movie audience gives a goddamn. I think all they wanted to go see in this movie, I don't think they had a real good idea. I mean, I'm just speculating here, but they went because they like Leo DiCaprio. He's a great actor.
Sure.
And Jonah Hill because he's a funny son of a bitch.
He's a funny fat guy.
Yeah. And then they probably didn't know what they were getting into. Now, maybe that's the wrong thing to say, but you know, I heard some stupid shit back at the end of the movie. That's the stupidest ending I've ever seen.
Yeah, no,
we were
that's
hating him
yeah,
we were
people.
Leaving.
Yeah, people had a really distinct and like throughout the movie there were scenes like whenever he wrote the note, like the people next to Andy were like, "What was on the note?" I'm like, "You should have paid attention to those." That was an important note. I don't know. That was
so. I think we're gonna be a little bit more. You know, because we're dyed-in-the-wool film goers, I think we're looking for those things a little bit more, and we're likely going to be harder on that. But the average film goer
would be able to accept it.
Do you think there was an element for the general movie-going public to go and watch this movie with lifestyles of the rich and famous fetish, which is pretty embedded in our culture in general?
I think so.
I feel like that's what allured a lot of people to go see it.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, and I think that
Scorsese...
Hey,
it lured me, and I was really stoked to see that Countach. That was fucking dope. I haven't seen one of those in, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years.
But I think Scorsese did that, and then I think he wanted to put his message in there, and I think, to me, it came across.
Okay.
To me, it did.
Well, I thought it was very well done. It's just some of the mixed messages...
Some of it was kind of hammy.
Well, and also, let's do the good stuff. We'll talk.
Okay.
Favorite scene. This is a big one. Favorite scene, favorite actor, but we'll start off with what you like in general about the 3-hour movie.
Okay.
So who wants to go first?
Okay, I guess I will go first because you're both looking at me. let's see. What I liked in general, well, you know, it's Scorsese. So in general, I like the directing.
Sure.
The way he handled cinematography.
Shots were perfect.
Yeah, most of the dialogue was really, I think, appropriate for those characters. It was very believable that, you know, these goofy dudes from New Jersey are going to get together. And then when they grow older, they're not like prim and proper all of a sudden. They're still goofy dudes from New Jersey, you know. Smarter, but still goofy.
Right.
I liked the directing with respect to how things are shot and the story overall. You know, it was crafted to keep you interested for 3 hours, which is a hard thing to do.
I think we can all agree that 3 hours felt like two.
Yeah. What was the second thing? I'm all mixed up now.
Either favorite scene or favorite performer.
I don't know if I could choose a favorite scene, so I'll do favorite performance.
Do you want me to run by you Justin's favorite scene?
Yeah, sure.
Off the top of his head.
Was it when Margot Robbie and Leonardo DiCaprio went home together? Was that it?
No. That's close, though. That cocaine Popeyes scene was the funniest thing I've seen in a long time.
That was pretty silly, yeah.
That's
pretty silly.
Props. I agree.
I actually really did like that entire. I don't, it's not my favorite scene, but I did really like that entire montage.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
He was on the Super Lemon Quaaludes.
Oh yeah, shout outs for Justin for sending us that tip.
Also the scene that involved. I think it was a Countach. It might be a Diablo, but I think it was a Countach. Favorite performance would probably be his wife.
The blonde one.
Yeah, I think she did.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah, Margot.
Australian actress.
How do you say her last name?
Robbie.
Robbie, okay. Yeah, she was great.
She was great.
Yeah, she did a really good job at playing a character kind of similar to the wife in Goodfellas, but probably a little bit.
And kind of similar to, I can't remember the actress's name. But similar to the actress that played the wife in Raging Bull.
Yeah,
yeah.
A damsel in distress. Yeah, well, no, you think she's a damsel in distress,
but she's really tough.
She's got barbs. Yeah, so that was, and she did
and
a great
she's
job.
She's got boobs.
Yeah, she looks fantastic.
Yeah,
no one can deny this. But yeah, she was really good. I thought she was really good. She was really believable, and she didn't seem like. She didn't seem like a caricature, which I really appreciated.
For sure.
Not that Scorsese would ever devolve into creating a caricature of that character.
Yeah.
You know. So I think she was my favorite performance. Rob Reiner's a close second just because he's great.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, he's great.
His goddamn fucking phone.
Yeah, that was great. Hello.
That was great.
Yeah.
Let's hear from you, Mr. A. What you got?
Man, it's hard to pick a favorite scene out of here, but the... one that comes immediately to my mind is the montage where the governmental lawyers are coming in to do all the depositions.
Sure.
And it cuts to the various dickheads that have been involved with the organization since the very beginning. And they're just stonewalling.
Yeah.
And then Charlie Ming, that one guy, he's just eating a donut. He's got shit all over his face, and they're being smart asses and everything. I thought it was pretty
cool. I got low blood sugar. It's a problem I have. I need to eat.
That's a nice name you have. Well, that's my name.
That was awesome. That's one of my favorite lines.
What's that name for
Alden?
What did he say? What was the question, though? Like, that's a nice name. Where's that from? And then he's like, well, it's from me.
Something like that.
It's like, what kind of name is that? He's like,
it's
my name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What kind of name is that? That's great. Performance?
Dude, I
DiCaprio is a standout, as always.
He is always a standout.
He did a great job.
I think it was one of the things, aside from Caprio.
But, every time Jonah Hill gets on the screen, I was just curious to see what other bullshit was going to come out of his mouth or
really
slam. And, you know, it's hilarious. I mean, some of that's just, you know, old humor from like the 1950s. You know, like, how is your wife doing? Well, she's still alive, so I'm still fucking miserable.
Okay, good things in general. I think, not to take, to piggyback off of you guys, you know, is like perfect. Directing is, he's done it so well.
Yeah.
Forever.
I mean,
right?
The cinematography is great.
He's a master of his craft. He made Hugo a movie with almost no actual dialogue, and it got awarded. It got nominated for Academy Awards. I mean, like,
it looks great.
He knows how to craft things. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I'm just gonna go with some general shots. They're pretty. You're engaged the whole time. Even the shot where he takes the what was it? The lemon quaaludes.
Yeah.
And he's trying to go down the stairs.
And he rolls down the stairs?
Yeah, yeah, but when you see it from DiCaprio's angle, just looking down a flight of stairs, you looked at that and I was like, wow, like, I feel bad for you.
Yeah.
Right? So I thought it was well done. Standout performance, I would have to say I am going to go with
Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, he did a great
job. I really
wish
he was in there more, because then I would have given it to him.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Jonah Hill.
Okay.
I thought Jonah Hill was very funny, the comedic element.
Yeah, I think he's at least going to get he's going to get a nomination for something.
He's going to get a nomination, yeah. And he was nominated for Moneyball too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he'll win it this time. But I thought he did a really good job. I really wish, actually, I'm going to take my favorite scene is when they're interrogating the gay butler. And the gay butler tells Jonah Hill, like, what are you talking about? You know that gay club. And then there's that, like, little thing, like, this.
He's like, what
do
you know? I like to dance.
I like to dance, right?
And if you'd listen to me and hired a Mexican like I did.
Yeah, that was great. That was a good scene.
That was a
right?
great scene.
Here's the thing. Oh, God, there's so many. I guess I'm going to be the detractor. There's so many things about the movie that I think could have pushed it further, and I would have enjoyed it more by watching this movie.
Maybe, you want more tits and ass?
Yep. I'm surprised, you know, and they have like the prosthetic dick when that's a great scene.
When Jonah Hill jerks off in the party, that is awesome.
That's a great scene. There's another, I was thinking like Tinto Brass films at that point when you're thinking about like really gross exploitation flicks. But Yeah, you get the rubber dick out and he's stroking it or whatever. I was surprised.
Borrowed it from a...
He had to have cut out some shit, don't you think, Mr. A?
He had to cut out a couple of frames.
I was saying before, I think it was supposed to get initially an NC-17 rating, and then I think Scorsese cut out like 4 minutes. It wasn't a lot of time, just like 4 minutes or less, and that brought it down to an R. So
Yeah.
But it's interesting you mentioned Tinto Brass, because I remember reading an interview somewhere that Leo DiCaprio wanted to use Caligula as kind of an example
for his character.
The way they were going to approach the excesses of the movie. Yeah.
You could see that.
Yeah, totally he succeeded. He succeeded.
Not as much balls.
Like in the airplane.
Yeah.
In the airplane whenever Leo is Vegas. Humping all over. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I meant when they went to Switzerland. That time. And Vegas.
When they went to Switzerland, they were doing the lewds.
Yeah.
But the Vegas was the one where they're having like the orgy on the plane.
Yeah.
And that part, I feel like an asshole. No, Jonah Hill was great. That was a good scene. I like Justin's scene.
I'm looking
as well.
Forward to Andy hating on this.
Do you want me to talk about the bad parts so you guys can get the last word in? I'll probably get the last word in anyway. But
I'm curious what you guys.
Okay, so things that I didn't like. Okay. We talked about the
movie. You're going to make your case because there's a lot of good stuff about this movie.
I think the good stuff outweighs the bad.
I agree to that.
But the bad stuff, and some of it is not even nitpicky, right?
Yeah.
Well, some of it is, but let's say like the things I don't like in general. For a Scorsese film, I feel like to get away from an NC-17 rating, they chopped it up, and you could tell where they fucking chopped it up.
Yeah.
There are lots of parts in this 3-hour movie, which is remarkable considering its length, that there are some funky edits even at the beginning of the movie when Rob Reiner comes in with the credit card statement. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that didn't make sense.
And he, well, like, that scene doesn't make sense, and I can see why it's there.
Yeah.
But there's a part where he makes a joke that was obviously said before, and I think there was one of those things where, like, hey, do a bunch of jokes with this credit card statement.
Yeah.
And if we need more stuff, we'll just pop it in.
Yeah.
And they pop it in when everyone's leaving the room, and his voice is like, it almost sounds like it was recorded in
dubbed
another room.
There are a lot of overdubs, especially in that. And I would say that there are some technical faults in the movie that I noticed.
I was surprised, especially for the Scorsese one,
especially on the barge when Kyle Chandler comes up and it starts interrogating him. You know, because there were a lot of cuts.
That entire mm-hmm. sequence seemed like, I don't know, the camera work was really strange.
That scene is probably 20 minutes long.
Yeah, and people looked really like, I don't know, it looked kind of not blurry, but like almost out of focus in between cuts.
And there were some scenes other than that where I think there was a scene where Leonardo DiCaprio is walking down a balcony or something and it's out of focus.
Or whenever Leo's wife catches him, basically.
In front of the movie theater.
In that scene, it also seemed as though, like, I don't know if in that scene it was the camera's fault. Whoever did the color correction seemed like they screwed it up. Like, everything looked beige in two of those scenes, and then everything else looked normal.
I swear to God, she shut the door on the limo twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I caught
she
that.
She did. Yeah. Right? She shut it,
and then when it was going away, it was still open.
So she shut it again.
She shut it again.
As in, like, we'll do it again, fuck it.
Well, I mean, but that's the other thing, too. Somebody that wasn't catching on the continuity errors.
Yeah,
I mean,
just weird
really
things like that.
It had to go on the chopping block in so many different places.
That might have been it, but, you know, those scenes.
And I'm not saying that's because of the NC-17 thing. I think that could just be because they literally shot so much of this fucking movie that they had to keep cutting things out.
It's a mix of NC-17 and, holy shit, we're going to have, like, a 4-hour movie on our hands.
Yeah, this is going to be a Lord of the Rings trilogy.
don't you think so, Mr. A? Like, I think some parts of it on the chopping block didn't transition well.
Yeah, I mean I think that's absolutely right. I mean, like, you have a lot of material. You're having to edit all this down. I mean, they're trying to make it 3 hours so that way you don't have a Lord of the Rings type experience. Yeah. And so inevitably there are going to be continuity errors. I noticed this when I first watched it, and then I said to myself, well, maybe it's not a continuity error, but when Leo DiCaprio is at the golf club.
Yeah.
And he's fucking out of his mind. Uh-huh. And then it's that POV.
Wait, which time at the golf club when he's out of his mind?
Well, no, it's when he's talking to us as the audience. He's saying, I'm going to crawl down these things. And then there's a POV shot, and it's like 15 steps.
Yeah, and then when he actually makes the fall, it looks like it's like a 25-step
instead
fall,
of like a six one.
Instead of like, yeah, when you get that out from, I guess,
where it's only like five steps.
Yeah, when you get when and you go I, out I noticed the Lamborghini, that. It looks like it's like a 10, 13 step thing.
It looks deeper.
Yeah, it looks much steeper too when he actually makes the tumble.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, well, you know, they had that medium shot in there, and they had the POV shots. Well, maybe they were trying to say because he was on lose or something. That's the way
he can't tell. Yeah, like that's he can't tell. Assuming. Yeah, that's what I was assuming too.
But when I initially watched, I thought that's just a fucking continuity error.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised. About the shutting of the door twice on the limo. I was surprised about Rob Reiner after everyone has finished talking about the credit card thing. It goes to a quick shot of Rob Reiner looking at the card statement,
the paper,
saying a joke like, "Who spends this much money on this?" Everyone already left, and the audio to get into that scene with him had already started playing,
dubbed over.
It's weird. Yeah. It's weird, and it was shoved in there.
There are two scenes, and I don't know if this was because of the theater. But I don't think it was, because I know when they cut, like, you can kind of tell because the picture jumps. In this one, it looked like the camera blurred and faded into the next scene.
Okay.
And it was a continuous scene.
Yeah.
So it just looked really weird. And
I
the audio
that.
Fucked up then, too. So, like, why are there...
For a Scorsese movie,
why are there errors
surprised.
Like this in it? Yeah.
But and earlier works of Scorsese, you'd be like, well, you know, you're working with lots of older stuff. You'll get a pass, but with this, like, he's so good.
Yeah.
And he has so much money to make this
movie. And you know, like we all kind of said before, Scorsese knows how to craft a film.
Well, interestingly
enough, errors like this?
Interestingly enough, I mean, it brings up something that, you know, maybe it's just because that he's been at it so long and, you know, it is a 3-hour movie, but, you know, sometimes just the details that you would normally see when you're a younger director. You don't catch. I mean, remember when we were watching William Friedkin's Killer Joe?
Yeah, Killer Joe also had errors.
There are a lot of fuck-ups there.
Yeah.
And, you know, a veteran director should catch all that stuff.
Yeah. And maybe some of it's nitpicking,
and
but
you
some
know,
of it took out
it
of
could,
the...
It could also be something where it was something out of his hands. Like, whenever they started to do the editing, like, they needed to rush to get it out. Because initially, this movie was supposed to come out during Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we're all
and then I think they got the NC-17 thing. They had to edit it down more. And then maybe in through the process of re-editing... It was just something, you know, they couldn't get the.
And I don't know what the process is with the NC-17 thing now, but I was reading. We watched. What was that crappy.
Holy God.
Not that one. Jean-Claude Van Damme and John Woo.
Oh, Hard Target.
Hard Target.
Yeah.
It's a fucking terrible movie.
It's a terrible movie. We watched it over during finals.
Yeah. It was stupid.
That movie got an NC-17 rating for violence. And John Woo was like, okay, like, what's wrong with it? And the agency wouldn't tell him. So he had to go through like eight different edits.
Maybe they, well, you know what? I don't know. I think they
would give Scorsese the due respect and be like, we have a problem with this.
I think they tell them now because when Shame first came out and they rated it NC-17, they told Steve McQueen what they would like change.
Yeah.
And I think he told them to go suck a dick.
Go suck the dick they see in that movie.
And exactly.
But I don't know. Like the editing thing, maybe it's a little nitpicky, but I was surprised like the two door shutting. The Rob Reiner edit, the overdub. There's one overdub when they bring the strippers in initially, and then they bring in the champagne, and they have like all the workers clapping, and one guy is like he mouths like "Oh champagne," and then someone says "Oh champagne,"
yeah.
And it's so obviously not that dude. Yeah. He's like "Oh champagne."
Well, when his mouth is moving, I thought it was gonna be kind of like one of those shell shock things where you're not supposed to hear it.
Yeah.
And
well,
it was just
it
supposed
there,
to be like the bass,
and
then it came in a second later.
Yeah.
So it was just
very strange. I think it's a rush. It was a rush.
Yeah.
They bit off more than they can chew. I only have. The editing thing was weird. The mixed messaging thing was weird. And then the last bit I want to say is when they get the group of guys together, the initial core of what becomes, what was the...
Oh, the first time.
Is it stock?
Oh, at the investor center?
The investing company. The investing company. So when they get all those guys in, all the schmucks that he knows
from New Jersey,
school, right? Really, it's only Jonah Hill and the drug dealer that really get... kind of fairly good screen time, right? Everybody else is just kind of there.
Well, and the
well, you see Odin fuck a nasty looking skank.
Which one's that? The white guy. The guy, the blonde guy?
Otter.
Oh, yeah. Otter, yeah.
Yeah.
But after the first part of the movie, they're just bodies in the front of the desk, right?
You
think it was a little underwritten for those characters?
I think so, too. Yeah. Like, if you're going to bring the whole troop in, and these guys are all going to be indicted.
Especially the law nerd. The law nerd only came in at the end when he was needed.
It was always
like... It didn't seem like they were even friends. It was just like, he's a law nerd.
If they're going to make it a story about Jonah Hill and DiCaprio, that's fine, but I'm saying he had all these characters and then he didn't do anything with them in the
end. I mean, a similar criticism you could say about Goodfellas. I mean, because Henry Hill, when he's starting all of his stuff, he's got all these other ancillary characters. I mean, one of them ends up in the back of a meat truck, the other one that's ends true. Up in the end of a dump. Those characters are really never developed because the emphasis is on that tie between Liotta. De Niro, yeah. Leota, and
but
Pesci.
In that one, do they recruit those guys?
Also, you don't see them continuously.
Well, also, but you know, like Mike Starr, the guy that said, "Hey, here's the I work at New York JFK Airport."
They bring
in all the money. And it's like he's never in there. He just tells them what's going on. It's like, okay, yeah,
yeah,
that's it.
And some of those guys, the lawyer, the drug guy, they're vehicles. You have another guy who is from My Name Is Earl, who is just there to be recruited. You have Otter, who's there to fuck a prostitute, right? Those guys don't even serve a purpose at that point, don't you think so?
They might as well be the shark.
What I thought was different,
because I agree about the Goodfellas statement, that there were ancillary characters who were only brought in when necessary. Those ancillary characters weren't on screen every 15 minutes cheering whenever
he's doing
Ray Liotta has a statement to make. Or something important to say.
If they didn't cast that one fella from Boy Meets World, do you think that, you know, that would be a little bit better? I mean, because, I mean, everybody recognizes
which
that
guy was the guy from the Boy Meets World?
It was a Boy Meets World. Yeah, the big
the really
guy.
Fat guy.
Oh, my name is Earl.
My name is Earl. Name is Earl.
Yeah, but he also played in Boy Meets.
Oh shit,
World.
I didn't know.
Was
that.
He
TGI fucking F?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I remember watching.
I don't remember.
You know?
But yeah, I mean, well,
he was a fat friend.
Yeah, it was that guy. The Asian guy was funny. I mean, the fat friend didn't even have a spot.
He didn't even have any lines.
Him,
yeah,
right?
when they had the deposing, he didn't say anything. I think he just said, "I don't know," or
and
some shit.
Again, I think it was one of those things, and this is what I would like to see. I would like to see a 4-hour movie.
If they made
a 4.5-hour movie, give me a fucking intermission. I bet you there are scenes that develop those characters a little bit more.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, look, I mean, Casino is what? Was Casino about 4 hours long?
Casino was a little over three.
I never got the chance to see it. So.
Yeah, I mean, he could have done a Casino thing.
Or Showa.
Oh, sure, yeah, sure.
But I think, you know, again, you got to realize, I mean, a lot of the movies nowadays, I mean, it's all about maximizing.
Yeah, it's a profit
the bottom
thing.
Line, getting
so, like,
butts in seats.
I think the theatrical, again, like what I was saying in the car from earlier, I think this might be one of those movies where the theatrical release isn't the true, like, a director's best release of the film. I think, like, when
I
it comes out on Blu-ray,
it'll be an alternative cut.
Something, yeah. I think an alternative cut.
Director's cut,
yeah,
unrated,
sure, unrated,
yeah. More it's gonna be like Jackass 2.0, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're talking about. More prosthetic dick.
Yeah. But I swear that dick that Jonah Hill whips out is probably the same dick Jack Nicholson whipped out in The Departed.
Yeah, it's the same dick that fucking Marky
you guys
Mark
are looking at dicks too much.
It's the same dick Marky Mark whipped out in Boogie Nights.
Wasn't that dick?
Oh yeah. I'm trying to. Okay, so that's and
Mark Wahlberg made you cough.
Maybe, yeah. Someone put your hand on my balls. Let's see. I think part of the problem, part of the downfall with me, with all like the weird cuts and even like the underdeveloped like minions, it goes to the fact that it was on the chopping block again, and a lot of this stuff you just have to deal with.
Yeah, it's associated with editing.
Because I mean, like, it was weird to me just seeing the pacing, and after the first, when
you think it sags a little bit in the middle?
I think it sags a lot. I hit a brick wall right when Leonardo DiCaprio gives a big speech. It wasn't the IPO, maybe it was the IPO speech. Is
that's actually
the first time he gives the really big?
Yeah, that's actually part of my.
When he gives the big IPO speech and kicks Steve Madden off to the side and he gives someone a talk, gives everyone the talk about sell, cram the...
Yeah, cram it down their throats.
There was a time and a place for a scene like that in a movie.
And that was misplaced there.
Wall Street greed. And I think they put it in too late because it's already like, I'm pretty sure you're beginning these fuckers the same talk every day right when they get there in their big office.
Yeah.
I was expecting that talk about sell, get me what I want. Right when he has 50 people working for him.
Yeah.
Not like talking to him
weird.
Like he's never talked to him. And then to see all the guys.
But I think you get a little bit of that at the very beginning because isn't the line that, you know, if you don't want to work here, you can go work at fucking McDonald's. Isn't that earlier
that's
in the movie?
That's the same. Isn't that the same?
That's actually one of my complaints.
Isn't that the same speech though?
No.
It's not. Was that before?
That's before.
Maybe my qualm starts with that McDonald's speech then.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you get to that speech, I'm like...
You just wanted Michael Douglas up there saying greatest
good. No, I wanted fucking Alec Baldwin up there doing Glengarry Glen Ross.
That's probably the best.
That shit took less than 5 minutes.
Who are you? Fuck you.
Fuck you. That's who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what second prize gets? A set of steak knives.
Yeah.
Everybody else gets the door.
Uh-huh.
Which is amazing.
There's some stuff I was a little worried because for about, I think, an hour and 15 minutes, I was along for the ride, and he gives that talk about going to McDonald's if you don't want to work here. That's a long speech, right?
Yeah.
It was about 3 minutes.
Was that the long speech where he goes through the crowd and he's like pumping his chest? Or is that the IPO speech?
That was the IPO.
That's the IPO.
And I have a problem with the IPO speech more than I do with the McDonald's speech. When they have the IPO speech.
Because like, isn't that when, because they all kind of run together now. Isn't that when he says, you know, he talks to that one woman and she says, you know, you came to me. The very beginning.
That's his retirement speech.
Okay.
Which is, it's confusing because I swear to God, they recorded all three of those speeches in the
at the same
day.
Time. All he did is change his clothes.
Yeah, they changed the clothes and they had the same guy sitting in the same place.
Basically, yeah. They didn't move the main characters around. The main characters are wearing basically the same clothing.
Probably stock footage.
In two of them, they're wearing the same clothes.
Yeah. But that speech loses a little steam right there when like, okay, this could have been a 2-hour movie, but everything would have been so predictable at that point.
Yeah.
Right? I really do like the length and where he took it, but you hit a couple spots.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, oh, it slows down. Performances are good enough to get you through, I feel like. But when he does that Steve Madden speech, I feel like it was terribly misplaced.
Yeah.
That's my least favorite scene. Let's give it to someone else.
I'll do it.
I ranted too long.
I'll do it. I'll do it because my complaints are pretty similar. Except my the pacing issue was a much bigger problem for me because there were sections. Every speech to me could have been shortened.
Okay.
Every speech. He has like 3 or 4 major ones, and all of them could be as long as the first speech he gives in the shitty New Jersey place. Because that went fast. He was just like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be this company. We're going to be nice. And then it went to like a fun scene where they were, you know, screwing with that guy. It's the one where they were on the intercom with that first guy. That was good. That was a good thing to do.
Leo but then fucked
after,
an imaginary hooker.
After that, all of those speech scenes went way too long for me. I got so bored and they became repetitive. The retirement speech I thought was going well because he pulled aside that one woman and then he just devolved back into repetition, which I think is the point.
That was the point of the
he was trying
happen.
To do that, but there
the
was
whole audience rolls their eyes at that point.
But see, yeah. I think the speech is, you know, I think you're to me, after having seen the movie twice now,
the expert,
the reason, twice now, expert PhD in this fucking film.
The
reason why I think you get a little long, I think it's by design. Because,
okay.
I mean, look, okay, I think it's everything's done in the movie. The movie, the whole movie is about excess, about how much is enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, goddamn, how much do these guys need to rake in order to just be happy with themselves? And they have to keep bloviating about how much money they're going to make. And why we kind of get bored with their lifestyle because all they're doing is talking about making money. They go out there like a bunch of goddamn robots that keep making money and then they keep snorting it up their nose and fucking it.
Well, okay. I'll take that. So I understand where Scorsese's trying to make things repetitive, right? But you can look at Requiem for a Dream, which is also a relatively long film and very repetitive scenes over and over and over again where Aronofsky does those really quick shots of like pupils dilating, like the cocaine being moved around. He could have just done something like that. Not to copy Darren Aronofsky, but to do something quicker because I feel like the way that the repetition was executed made the movie feel repetitive and boring. I understand that you want it to be repetitive, but don't make it boring for me. There's a better way to handle that, and Scorsese knows that there's a better way to handle that.
Don't you think it's a telling sign that we saw this movie probably like 40 minutes ago and we got them all mixed up anyway?
Yeah, like all the speech scenes. It's unnecessary to have them go on for that long. He should have cut those speeches. He should have added time to the jokes with Rob Reiner or to the jokes developing characters.
I think in the retirement speech, I mean, I felt that was the most overlong speech.
But
when I watched it, I mean, especially when he has that interlude with the woman who had the financial problems.
Yeah. That was good.
That was cool.
To me, but yeah, but that's necessary because it shows that underneath the veneer of wanting to be a badass and wanting to make all this money and to, you know, date all these, there's some there's some inkling of morality there.
I took it the opposite way.
I took it the opposite way, too.
Because the way he said it, where he's like, tell him what I fucking did for you.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
I was like, what a fucking asshole.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. Well, no, it was like, it was basically like, recognize me for what I did.
It's a twisted morality.
Really fucked up. Yeah, it's a mixed up morality of like, wow, this guy helped this lady out significantly.
But he wants recognition.
Oh, he wants recognition. And it's like, let me tell him how good I was to you. Tell him how, And I really feel like at the end of the movie, it's a man who is unchanged.
Yeah, that's
because he can get away with it still.
Exactly, but yeah, the editing. It was still.
I mean, but see, obviously, because of the way you're reacting in the movie, you're pissed off at the guy that he never got his just desserts, right?
He did not,
and he didn't in real life, which is the point.
And yeah, I think that's the reaction that Scorsese wants you to have. Is look, there are people out there who are doing all this shit.
Yeah.
You have the people who on Wall Street, all these bankers who defrauded all these people out of their money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they get a fucking bailout from the federal government. And you know what? They haven't gotten anything. Whereas the people who were really working hard, the people who were victimized by people like this, they're still getting the shaft.
Well,
and there should be some righteous indignation. I think that's what's coming up in y'all's...
Sure. Yeah. But at the same time, Mr. A is a very bright man, right? And for a movie, it's being so heavy-handed... It didn't even gloss over anything that Mr. A has talked about in its heavy-handed way.
Yeah.
Right? Don't you think so? I don't feel like there's some sort of like, don't you feel like these guys should get it? Right? Don't you feel like it's just... And I think
that gets back to Scorsese, though, because
that
ambiguity in filmmaking is like, I'm not going to tell you what to think. I might be heavy-handed in the technique.
Well,
I might be heavy-handed in the technique, but... At the end of the day, you're going to come up with your own assessment of who these characters are and what you feel about what I put up here on the screen.
Sure.
I do agree to a certain extent because Scorsese doesn't tell you how to feel about Jordy, but there could have been more attention placed upon the FBI investigation or something like that. Because
I was waiting for more of Cat and Mouse.
Yeah, I kind of wish there was more of the FBI because I like that. He did that actor.
I mean, there's
so
many
job.
Things you could do with the movie, though.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like a 4-hour movie. I think it's going to be a great 4-hour movie.
Yeah, I felt like there could have been more to involve the FBI because just the fact. I was just in mediation training. So, like, just the fact that so much attention was placed solely on Jordy and his actions and so little time was really focused on. The justice system. I mean, I'm including like all the time
but
questioning
also, I mean,
all the people.
My counter to that, Sam, would be look, the source material
Jordan
Belfort's memoir, The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
So he's going to tell it from one angle, so it hasn't necessarily focused on Leo DiCaprio. It can't focus on the procedure.
Why not?
Just because
he wouldn't know
the source material.
You could just go research and ask him. They're basically cat and mouse.
At the same time. It gets back to what
it's all about.
It's
all about this guy.
I don't know. I feel like it could have been a little bit more balanced, but I thought it was balanced in the sense that Scorsese is just like, is this guy good or bad? Focus on this guy.
I could see he's going for the Wolf of Wall Street, though. I feel like I was really thinking it would be another Departed or another Goodfellas where it's like the FBI is just chasing the paper.
Which I enjoyed a lot.
It's good. It's fun to see that procedural.
Yeah.
Right? And then this one, though, I think part of it is we didn't get enough of it because I bet a lot of that hit the chopping block. You saw in the scene when they went to the ship.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of awkward pauses and lots of staring and sitting when the whole movie is a bunch of blowhards just spouting off, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I thought was weird. And you could say, well, maybe it's because he was really nervous. FBI was really nervous at the standoff, but I really don't think that's what it was. I think it was just an awkward chopping because I think that FBI scene where they first – meet with each other on the boat is when they start cutting it out. Like, oh, it was a 10-minute scene. We're going to chop it down to 6 minutes.
I would agree that that's a flawed scene, but there are some things which do kind of lift it up a little bit. I mean, some of the banter at the very end, get the fuck off my boat.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Here's
a whole year's salary. And guess what they are? They're fun coupons.
Yeah, they're fun coupons. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I thought that was the dumbest thing to call some money.
Yeah, that was a goofy joke.
That's like, things mind terrible nicknames.
Yeah.
That was so funny. But also when he does the bribe, I thought that was very strange. Where he says upwards of $100,000.
Well, he says upwards of $500,000,
A
little over $500,000 is specific enough to be a bribe.
Yeah. But at the same time, and then he's just like staring and then it's like, could you say that again one more time? I thought it was funny because the guy shows up, but I felt like that was just shot in a weird way.
Yeah. I also thought it was weird he wasn't recording all of that.
On his own person.
The FBI, yeah. I would have done that.
I think that's why they got the other guy in, because he didn't catch it up on the other guy's mind.
Well, then...
That's what I took it as.
That was just odd, because I thought... It was just I mean, agents are always listening now, so...
Yeah.
It wouldn't...
But, I mean, this, how do we even get on that part?
I don't know. We've been in about like a 10-minute
tangent
here. Well,
because I was talking about the editing and some of the pacing issues, and then we got into...
Editing, pacing, there are significant issues.
But yeah, those are really bothersome for me.
Not enough to detract, but I was just surprised out of a Scorsese production.
Also,
door closing twice.
I do have one really nitpicky
Let's
thing.
Hear it.
A dumb nitpicky thing. Whenever the Countach got fucked up, I don't think a Countach would get that destroyed from the from the collisions it was making
at the speed it was going.
Yeah. That was a little weird. I mean, at the end when it was all fucked up, that's fine. But like when they were showing the car driving around hitting things, and then when you saw it at the end, it was a little weird. Like they must have used like a replica or something.
They had to.
And they didn't use the same quality of aluminum or whatever.
It's probably like a golf car on a chassis of.
Yeah, it was just really weird.
Yeah.
But that's super nitpicky.
Some nitpicky stuff. I feel like good outweighs the bad, but I feel like the tonal shifts for me, very strange. Some of the speeches could have been flip flop, but let's hear from Mr. A.
Yeah.
What question am I supposed to answer?
What did you not like?
What did you not like in general?
Yeah.
Well, I think some of the things have already been said. You know, the editing kind of bothered me, the out-of-focus shots. And part of it wants me to give a pass to Scorsese, because every movie that he makes, I mean, you know, it's not like we're watching a Rennie Harlan film here or anything. I mean, he's a great director.
Yeah.
And maybe part of it's attributable to the fact that, you know, I don't – correct me if I'm mistaken here, but I think this is maybe the first film he shot in all digital.
Wow.
You know, because Hugo. Hugo was all animation.
Animated, yeah.
And Departed was probably still on Kodak film.
Departed is on Kodak. I think you're right.
So yeah. I mean, that might be some fuck ups with just the technology.
Sure.
But you know, even he had Thelma Shoemaker edit it.
Yeah.
I mean, and she did Goodfellas, and you know,
she's done a lot of stuff with him.
The Aviator. She's done a lot of other stuff.
The Aviator was what I was going to talk about. Another fairly long movie, right? I think this lady who would edit The Aviator would know how to edit this.
I mean, she's a veteran editor. Yeah, she's worked with Scorsese. She knows how Scorsese likes the movie to breathe.
This movie is probably 4 hours long,
though. But I think you're right, Andy. There was so much material in there. And I'm sure that, you know, a lot of that dialogue that happened between Leo DiCaprio, Rob Reiner, mm-hmm. and Jonah Hill, a lot of that was probably not even in the fucking script. They were just kind of going off the hip there for a little bit.
I think, like,
kind of pulling a Steven Soderbergh.
Ad lib.
Yeah.
There was ad lib
going
on.
They didn't know what to use.
Oh, sure.
And they probably had a lot. They probably had reams of great material to use.
I think you get people like Rob Reiner to ad lib and then just do a B reel, and then we'll use that stuff.
Yeah.
They use it in a piss poor way in the movie, I thought, for that one instance when he's looking at the credit card statement. When it did work, I'm talking Jonah Hill talking to the
I would venture to say 85%, 90% of that stuff that Jonah Hill said in the movie probably
I
wouldn't
think
even
they
a
hired
damn script.
Him for just to start out.
Just a gab, yeah.
Yeah.
Because when he
And Scorsese does that, I mean Goodfellas, yeah. I mean the whole scene of I'm a fucking clown and I fucking amuse you, that was all improvised.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was
I mean, you know, there were some editing problems. I felt that the pace sagged a little bit in the second chapter of the film.
Yeah.
Particularly, even though I thought it was funny when they go to Italy, and you know, it's all plot-driven, but when they have to go through they have to take the yacht, and they get caught in the chop and everything like that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it kind of sagged in that
when it gets to that
general neighborhood
of
the movie.
Thing, it's like, okay, now you guys are embellishing.
Yeah, it was a little weird whenever that airplane blew up.
The airplane blew up.
The ship thing did happen.
Inexplicable.
The ship thing did happen.
I believe the ship thing happened.
No, yeah, but the airplane thing was completely
artistic license.
Weird. that was just weird.
That was inexplicable. And it's like to see it, and it's like, okay, the only reason
also,
why they showed him dancing on the ship was to show you the plane coming in and blowing up.
And just because I did it with gravity, physics wise, why would the ship be that close to the Earth with that type of storm? That doesn't really.
Why would a plane be flying that low?
I mean, sorry, a plane. Yeah, why would the plane be ship, that low. Airship? Booyah!
To go and pick him up on that ship, like the Italian, we're gonna be like, yeah, that's fine. I believe
that
the Italian thing, I believe the ship thing happened. That part wasn't weird.
That part I could see. But the airplane flying that low and exploding, like that would never happen.
There's no use for it.
And also those jets, the turbines are moving so fast. You could get 20 seagulls sucked in there. They're going to come out as pink mist and you're going to keep flying.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe artistic license, but I did think it sagged a little bit. And like we've been talking about here for the past 15 minutes or so,
yeah.
The editing could have been a little bit sharp,
yeah.
More sharp.
I'm just surprised. I would not think that, you know, on IMDb, when you look at this movie, it's going to be...
It's an 8.7.
It's an 8.7, but when you look on down, it's like little gaffes, little things in the movie, like little hiccups, bloopers. It's going to be on there. She shuts the door twice.
Yeah.
And the whole Rob Reiner thing is just a weird edit. The airplane thing is inexplicable.
That doesn't make any sense. Unless it was something, you know, he was fucked up. It could have been something he imagined because he was fucked up. But then he said that was the airplane that was going to... Yeah, three people died.
And no bother.
Yeah.
That was the other problem. And do you guys think that the debauchery at some point gets a little tiresome? Like, you could see them all fucking hookers twice.
Yeah, but I think that's...
What's wrong with fucking hookers?
I think he did that on purpose, but yeah, it got kind of boring.
I think that's what, like, something that I think Billingsley, not to put words in Mr. B's mouth, right? But, like, to think when he says it's heavy-handed, I feel like that's pretty heavy-handed.
Yeah.
The debauchery part is pretty heavy-handed. Let me cue up Mr. B's thoughts.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he gives it a grade, but he says, and he's on the negative spectrum, full of characters that deserved neither my sympathy nor my laughter. Spoken like a true statesman that Mr. B is.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's a little bit of guilt in there because it implies that he laughed.
He laughed. He did not deserve the laughter. Yeah. He felt bad about giving it to them. But I could see where he's going with that.
I think I can too, yeah.
But
I can understand.
I'm going to laugh at their misery anyway.
Laugh at their misery, laugh at how goofy they're being. But I really think that sometimes it's hard to like these people, and it was really hard for me to even care what happened with this guy on his downfall, especially when he's so...
But see, I think that's a trait of any Scorsese movie that you watch.
That's true.
There are no likable characters.
Do you
like Travis Bickle?
I disagree.
Do you like
Jesus Christ.
I like John.
But even in that movie, it was hard for you because he was such a wimp, portrayed by Willem Dafoe. You know,
Willem Dafoe. See, that's one movie you have to watch.
I disagree because I've got it. I like the dude in Raging Bull. He's not a good guy, but I liked his character. And like what
but
he was
they're
doing.
All fallen characters.
Yeah, but I mean Howard Hughes, I also liked a lot. He's going crazy, but I liked Howard Hughes a lot. Like isn't the correct word. I cared about that character. I didn't really.
But you always get that in a Scorsese.
No, the only way I really cared about Leonardo DiCaprio in this movie is when the FBI stuck it up his ass. That's why I was smiling toward the end, is because the FBI guy won, kind of. Asterisk.
And you get I think with the Goodfellas. If you're going to do parallels with Goodfellas, you see a guy who's come up from nothing.
Yeah, I care about Ray Liotta the entire time. Yeah,
because he's kind of a likable guy.
He is likable. This guy
he is likable.
At the beginning,
hey, Leo's likable.
He's likable. But he helps
random ladies.
He turns into a sack of shit really early on. And then when he's like so easily, when he hugs Jonah Hill and says, you know, I'd give you the same money.
Oh, no, you, no. You know I'd do the same thing for you.
Right, I'd do the same thing for you.
And then he just turns around.
He'll turn around and just...
Rats him out
in the end.
Yeah.
He makes it seem like he had... But he did it really quickly, I think. I think he turned on him pretty fast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. But let's...
Also, I couldn't tell, by the way. Did Jonah Hill's character also get in trouble? I couldn't tell because he was deleting a bunch of stuff whenever the feds came in. But the feds didn't come in for him. They came in for everyone else. But we didn't see the feds go into his office and be like, we're taking you in too. I'm assuming
they did. Because there's 12 people that got indicted that he helped get them indicted.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, okay.
There's no way that he wasn't one of the 12.
That's good.
And then the Asian guy and all the other guys that we never heard of.
He probably just got... Yeah, Jonah Hill probably just got in... Donnie probably got in trouble less because he provided the note.
Yeah.
Which is also breaking the wire stuff that
Jonah
he should have gotten
provide
in jail
the
for.
Note?
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Did Jonah Hill provide the note to the FBI?
He had to.
He had to because you show that shot where he's covering up. With
the he takes the napkin and brings it to himself.
He doesn't bring it to himself. He just covers it.
But I was wondering if he had the friend. There was a guy that was the mole in the company.
Oh, like the entire time?
Yeah.
If there was anyone, I don't think there was a character like that.
Remember the guy that called the FBI and said he's
that?
I was wondering.
I think that was just an inconsequential dude.
Okay.
Just a guy or someone who had just like. Tapped.
I will say that I'm looking forward to the unedited bit. Not so much like the
if one exists.
I really hope that there's.
Yeah,
one
I hope there's. I hope there's a
cut.
Different. Yeah, I hope there's a different cut
because
I think
owes
this
it
movie.
To himself,
yeah, this movie suffered.
Amazing.
Yeah, this movie suffered a lot because of the cuts. And I understand the compromise that he had to make in creating a theatrical release like this. Like, I mean, it would have been really weird for Scorsese to be like, and now I'm releasing this on Google Play only.
I really
it's too
think
long.
That
you know?
Scorsese...
That would be weird. People would still watch it, but it wouldn't be a hit the way it is now.
I think that's
because people love it. I mean,
wanted to make his version of a party film to some extent with this movie.
Yeah,
because everything
so.
About it, and you get
it's
some spectacular
it's a movie about access. Yeah,
boat,
it's
right?
a movie about access.
And you get some of that stuff, and you know it's like, and he's having a good time filming it, which you can tell.
Yeah.
I'm interested. I'll kick it off with Justin's rating first. He gives it an A plus. He says it's one of the best ones he's seen. In a
What's
long
that
time.
On a 1 to 10 scale?
I'm guessing, and he's been like,
the highest
he's been
he
like
can
the
get.
Last holdout. This guy to give us a number rating. I'm just going to give it an arbitrary 9.
I'll say
5.
No. I'll say his is a 9.5.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
A plus is 100%, so maybe it's a 10.
Yeah, it could be a 10.
Yeah,
out
it could
10
be a 10. 9.5.
We'll assume. Okay, let's assume just for sake of devil's advocate, it's a 9.5.
We'll give it a 9.5.
Yeah,
we'll err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
Well,
and Billingsley said that he.
I'm thinking Billingsley is going to give it. Generally unfavorable.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's way less than a 7.
Yeah.
Maybe a 6, 5?
I think it's way, I'm thinking at least a 5.
4.
Yeah,
four
maybe a 4.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't even... There's a huge problem with very little redemption with the characters.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't... That doesn't bother me. I mean...
Oh, yeah, I don't think the characters have to be redeemable.
No,
I mean, there are...
I don't even have to like them. I don't even have to like them.
Yeah, I love There Will Be Blood. But Plainview is one of the worst people in movies.
Yeah.
Like he's terrible.
Yeah.
But I love There Will Be Blood, and I cared about Plainview a lot.
I mean, think about any Beat Takeshi movie we've watched and reviewed. There's no redemption for them. The redemption they get is a bullet in the head.
I actually really like Beat Takeshi, though.
No, I love it. That's what, you can get away with
the redemption.
But
his character. I loved his character.
Yeah, but all the other guys, too. All the other terrible people.
Yes.
This guy, there's something about the way he's treated at the end where he just goes back to being a salesman.
Yeah.
And I get the full circle thing, but I don't think it works as effectively as this man has no redemption, and it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, there's something left unsaid that maybe Scorsese wants you to feel.
Yeah.
Which would be the
unedited
righteous anger.
Yeah. Right? But at that, when the way the ending is presented is like the movie has end to go home.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted a little bit more. Anyway, do you want me to do my rating?
Let's start it off, and we'll give Mr. A. We'll hear
I'm
from
processing
Mr. A,
something
and
right
give
now.
Him the last, we'll give him the
okay.
last word.
I would. Okay. So, Wolf of Wall Street, I liked it a lot, and I would recommend that people see it.
Yes.
But I would also maybe recommend people wait for a Blu-ray release. Because again, the movie's sort of long. You might need to rewatch. There are some parts where I missed some things, or I thought I did, but I guess I didn't. I guess it was just Rob Reiner making a joke that he didn't set up properly before.
It
things like that. I was
edited.
Just confused.
Color correction was off on that too.
The color correction and a bunch of parts were kind of off. But it is digital. It was new for him, and the colorists have to work with digital differently from film. Anyway, I would probably give this a really, really strong 8 because I liked the movie and I thought it was good.
I'm surprised
for a film for well, no, yeah,
I
know
thought you were gonna give it higher.
No, it's because for this might be prejudicial against Martin Scorsese because I know he's such a talented director, and I know that he had a vision for this film that was really high. I don't feel he achieved for me. He didn't satisfy for me what a Scorsese film does. Like I watched The Aviator on a DVD, right? And I loved The Aviator.
Okay.
I thought that was dope. There are very few errors that I thought were glaring enough for me to be bothered by.
Uh-huh.
Same with Raging Bull, I don't think has errors. Taxi Driver, I just didn't like, but that's kind of because I saw it a long time ago. Maybe I'd like it now.
Taxi Driver's kind of a nihilistic movie, too.
Yeah, I just didn't like that one that much. But, not Raging Bull. Goodfellas, I thought, is fantastic.
Goodfellas is
that's my favorite. Like, if we're going to, I know you alluded to ranking the films. If we're,
we'll get there. Yeah.
Goodfellas is my top. It's Goodfellas, Aviator, and then I haven't seen Hugo yet. That'd probably be pretty high because I love animated movies. I love kids' movies. But, Wolf of Wall Street, it's not that it disappointed me, it's that I feel like it could have achieved much more. And I mean, I know it's a theatrical release and there was kind of a botched editing maybe because of how the film was delayed a month and the release was weird. So I think it is really good though. People should see it in theaters if they, you know, want to have a good time. But if you really want to get the full story, maybe wait for the Blu-ray or Netflix, whatever it comes to later. So strong 8, super strong 8.
Strong 8, not even 8.5.
No.
Wow. I thought Sam was going to give this one like a 9.
No.
Well,
I thought it was going to give a 9 because he came out of the movie.
There are too many.
Like a good school boy.
There are too many. No, that was because he got owned at the end. Oh, kind of. Yeah. FBI guy one, sort of.
Kind of. He went to a summer resort for 4 years.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, no. There are too many errors.
Well, yeah. I guess it'll be my turn. I would have to say that I have seen much worse films. Well, actually, a much worse film in my mind, which would be Shutter Island.
Oh, I never saw that.
As far as
Shutter Island's pretty weak sauce.
As far as a mainstream,
I really wanted
movie,
that to be cool. It looked cool.
Talk about Scorsese trying to go uber mainstream, and I think he's done that supremely well with Wolf of Wall Street compared to Shutter Island. Hugo, I haven't seen.
Like the audience he's talking to is different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Shutter Island is just going to be a masterful suspense movie, and you see the twist coming on. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah,
I forgot what it was. I was like 30 minutes in. I was like, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it did. And I was terribly, terribly disappointed.
Kind of left you bored.
It was shot fine, I thought. And I think with Scorsese, you expect.
Well, yeah, again.
Beautiful shot.
Yeah, he knows how to craft the film. He knows how to tell a story.
And then again, you have something here where it's like the life of Belford is probably. Needs more than 3 hours to give you a full appreciation.
Well, the
it.
Way he's telling it, the way he wants you to hear the story.
Yeah, the way he wants you to hear it, and the way you want to watch. Because
he could have made this. He could have made this an hour and a half long and made it like a Wall Street 3.
He could. It could have been a traditional just.
But Oliver Stone kind of sucks now, so we don't want to have any association with that.
That was the point.
That's just to Trump Oliver Stone, right?
You suck.
But the way it went down, it was an engaging watch. You have to give him credit to be like,
yeah, absolutely. Like,
3 hours, was
like we
two
said,
hours.
It's the fastest three hours.
Yeah.
In film history,
we experience time like the characters do when they're on lewds.
Oh yeah. And that was shot pretty well too. I thought
that was fun.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Great scenes in general.
Yeah,
weird editing.
That might be one of my that's one of the most memorable scenes when they're on the lemons and they're like rolling around and shit. That's just awesome. Yeah.
Great performance.
Yeah.
By Leo DiCaprio. Great performance by a lot of people. Just because it's hard to relate to the characters more so than I could in Goodfellas. And it's been like probably about 2 years since the last time I watched Goodfellas. But I can tell you that I felt, even from a younger age, watching Goodfellas, that I cared more about Ray Liotta's arc with his wife.
Same.
Particularly as a couple.
Yeah, same.
Like, holy shit, man. Like, even if he's in trouble, you always think, what's this couple going to do? They're going down together.
Yeah, and you know, there are moments in Goodfellas and... There are moments where Henry Hill doesn't say it, but you can just tell by Ray Liotta's expression on his face, like something bad's going on.
Yeah.
And I, you know what? And I'm going to participate in it anyway because I'm a fucking coward.
Yeah, stuff like that. And you get it. I think that could be the nuance compared to this movie where he'll cut. I think one of the most enraging things is when he'll break the plane. Talk to the audience.
I really dislike that.
I don't know, maybe
it's because I kind of know what the movie is about or because we understand how stocks work, but that shit was very frustrating.
I know I'm confusing you.
It's like, dude, don't do that. This isn't, you can't get away with things like that. You're not Wes Anderson. You can go out of picture and make something goofy because that's not the style of film
you
make.
Well, it's condescending as well. It's condescending and the way he says it and is this stuff
Let me explain to you what Quaaludes are after we've been using them for like 20 minutes.
That's the weird part too. They should explain the
context
right
clues, motherfucker. Yeah. Couldn't you figure it out by now?
But I feel like we're bashing it too much for considering how much you gave it an 8, man. That's pretty strong.
It's a 3-hour movie. There's lots of good stuff and lots of bad stuff.
I'd say there's way more good stuff though.
Yeah, I agree.
But I'm gonna have to give it a 7.
Okay.
I'm gonna give it a 7. Which I think would be a happy medium between where Sam is and where Mr. B is. I don't think he liked it, but he said he didn't like it, but that you had to go and see it. So I'm glad we did go see it.
Yeah, I am
it's
too.
Definitely a 7. I know that if the film when it comes out on Blu-ray is a director's cut or unedited version, I will buy it.
Yeah, I'll be disappointed if it's the same as a theatrical release.
A solid Scorsese flick, I'd say, and I can't wait for Silence. Which I think is called
that's going to be fucking awesome.
Shinmoku.
Yeah.
Which is in production now.
It is in production.
Okay, so for all the listeners out there who don't know, right. Silence is a critically acclaimed novel by Japanese writer Shusaku Endo.
Endo, yeah.
And Scorsese didn't want to make this movie for the past 20 years.
A long time.
And I'm very intrigued by it.
It sounds awesome.
Being a Catholic It's about the Jesuit missionaries in Japan. And you know, for anybody that's read the novel, it's just one of those. I really hope that Scorsese does justice to it, because when I read the novel, I could tell when I like a novel, it's just when I'm breathless by it.
Oh my God.
And I had that response. And it's been in gestation now for
years. Decades.
So hopefully he'll make a good run at it. But
I think so. Andrew Garfield's on the...
Daniel Day-Lewis was attached to it at one time. I think he had the bow
dropped, out. Yeah. I think Guillermo del Toro was on it too. I don't know if he dropped too.
Yeah.
But it should be good. It's is Scorsese Catholic as well?
He's a fallen Catholic. He used to be a seminarian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's right.
And then he went east of Eden.
Yeah, and then he kind of, you know, got involved in Blow.
Get it? Because he loves Elia Kazan, and that's one of his movies.
Yeah, yeah, but that should be a good one, I do believe. I'm looking forward to that. And he kind of alluded in the press conference at for Wolf of Wall Street that he's kind of like, you know, I'm getting old. I don't know how much more of these I still got left in me. So I'm really happy that this one's coming out.
It should be cool.
Yeah. And,
well, I mean, but you look at people like Clint Eastwood here in their 80s, and they're still making pretty good movies.
Yeah, but Clint Eastwood's directorial style is
pretty shitty.
Yeah, he's just like, do whatever the fuck you want. Gran Torino. Give a shit.
Gran Torino was a good movie.
Hey, I like Gran Torino, but it's not
Gran
like
Torino that are good.
There are aspects of Gran Torino.
I thought Mystic River was a great movie.
Oh, fucking fantastic!
Mystic River is Clint Eastwood's like that, and Letters from Iwo Jima. Yeah,
Letters from Iwo Jima is my favorite war.
I even like Flags of Our Fathers. Okay,
oh, dude, I fucking hate Flags of Our Fathers. That's like a 2.5 for me. That movie is fucking shit. I saw that in Austin before the movie came out. It was a theatrical screener for us, and I hated that shit. Me and my friends were so mad at Clint Eastwood. Letters from Iwo Jima made it up.
Letters from Iwo Jima is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, Flags with Our Fathers is a 2. Letters is like a 20 out of 10.
It's amazing. Yeah. Anyway, but like,
I'm okay. Okay, so back to the issue at hand.
Let's hear your rating. We'll go to the pantheon of the whole catalog of Scorsese after you give us the rating.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to give this movie a strong 8.5. And, you know, irrespective of the fact that there are editing fuck-ups in the movie, and you could say that the pacing kind of... And for movies this long anyway, the pacing always kind of falls in the middle.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. It's,
it
it's
always
hard.
Kind of sags.
It's hard. Even in Lord of the Rings, Return of the King was about 2 hours and like 50 minutes.
Oh, shit. You watch the Godfather series. I mean, you know, about hour number 3,
yeah.
It's like, okay...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I kind of see where the chess pieces are moving. Let's just get on with it. Let's just get on with it.
Definitely.
And it kind of sucks. But you know what? We're criticizing Scorsese. I mean, that's like criticizing Mozart or Beethoven for writing a new symphony. It's like, oh, well, this wasn't as good as the 5th or the 6th, right?
I don't know.
I mean,
I can see the analogy.
But what I'm saying is we're watching a Scorsese film. This is a master of his craft. And granted, the comments that we said here, we expect a little bit better of him on the editing side and some of the...
Surprising. It was just...
But I mean, I think that's weird. Explainable. But it's not like we're watching something like...
as well.
It's not like we're watching something by, you know, Steven Spielberg, who I think sucks.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Jesus Christ,
Schindler's List
is great.
That's the only good movie. Oh,
Jurassic Park
is good. Jurassic Park, Schindler's
good.
List.
Steven Spielberg hasn't made a good movie in the past 10 years.
Lincoln.
War Horse!
Lincoln. I turned off Lincoln after 30 minutes.
Yeah,
I
remember that. Irrespective of that, we're dealing with an American master. Most of his movies have entered into the National Library of Congress because of their certificate. And so it's kind of, we feel like we need to beat up on him because, well, these are just all these errors in there. But I mean, granted, new technology, 3-hour movie, a lot of it's improvised. There are going to be inevitably going to be continuity errors. To me, the good so far outweigh the bad. The ad-libbing between Jonah Hill and Leo DiCaprio. And even though you thought it was a mixed message, I thought that everything was deliberate and I could see where the arc was going, okay?
Oh, I think I could see where the arc was going, too.
I mean, maybe I haven't made my argument strong enough, but I mean, reasonable minds can disagree, but I thought the message and the complete, you know, horrid lifestyles that these people were leading, I mean... That to me, it just came across apparent. And you know, you don't want these guys to win. You laugh at them because they engage in such stupid behavior.
Yeah.
And you know, it's always good to see a Scorsese film. I had a good time watching it. I had a great time watching it the second time. So 8.5.
That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to your question about an hour and a half ago, about where this lines up in the Scorsese pantheon. You know, here's the thing about Scorsese films, and he's a lot like Stanley Kubrick or. I would say Sidney Lumet or William Friedkin, for that matter, because they release a film, and inevitably their films always get mixed reviews. Inevitably. I mean, 9 times out of 10, films get mixed reviews.
Sure.
Goodfellas is one of those outliers. Raging Bull is one of those outliers because people just didn't recognize. But
Hugo too.
But even
not really
but
like
even
a
in his lesser works,
film.
there's mostly there are mixed reviews. And with the passage of several years, people after watching the films 10, 15, 20 times, it's like, you know what? That's better than I remember it being.
Well, think about
they always gain in critical
reception
stock.
From Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah,
when that first came
Last
out.
Temptation of Christ. I remember watching that when I was about, you know, I was in high school or sophomore in college or something. I was like, you know what? That really sucks.
Yeah.
But watching it, you know, the second time and the fourth time or the sixth time,
sure.
It's like, you know what? That's a really powerful movie. Mm-hmm. And even though everything in it is completely heretical, if divorcing all of that stuff, it's a really powerful story about the human experience.
Sure.
And I think any Scorsese movie tells you that. I mean, because he portrays the saint and the sinner in each person.
Yeah.
Wolf of Wall Street, this is somebody who maybe can be forgivable because he's a product of the environment that he grew up in. You know, he has redeemable parents, but the time he comes of age is during the Reagan era.
Yeah.
You know, the greed is good bullshit.
Greed is good, and it carries over that.
And it's a cautionary tale of where our country is going. And I think that that's the lesson that Scorsese wants to bring across is that, look, if we keep letting these guys do this, and if our culture continues to applaud people like this, we're in for some real big hurt because the destruction that happened to these guys' lives is going to happen to us on a grander scale. So I appreciate that. Now, where it falls in the Scorsese pantheon, I'd have to say it probably, for me, it ranks somewhere in the middle. Because Scorsese's made about, you know, 15, 20 films.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's not in the top five. I would put it kind of like in the middle.
Okay.
Somewhere toward like, you know, Last Temptation of Christ is kind of in the middle for me. Or Bringing Out the Dead. I'd even put The Aviator in it. To me, the top five Scorsese films are Goodfellas, Raging Bull. I mean, those two are interchangeable to me.
Oh, those two are interchangeable, but they always deserve to be up top.
Yeah.
I put Taxi Driver up there.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Mean Streets, and I love The Age of Innocence. But and then kind of 6, 7, and 8. That
can all kind of be mixed up in the jungle.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not top five, is what you're saying.
It's definitely not top five. It's in the middle. Now maybe that will change.
Is Departed in the middle for you?
Yeah, because Departed, you know, it's a good film. It's just not as strong as some of his earlier work.
Oh, I believe that, yeah.
Because to me...
I like the Departed a lot. I think I just liked it because it was fun.
Departed seems too commercial for me.
It's very commercial.
That's
but
why I liked
Shutter
it.
Island
it's
is much
fun.
More commercial.
Shutter Island stuff.
I think Departed was the start of that
they show,
commercial.
Yeah, they showed the Departed on TBS or some shit. It was on TV a couple days ago.
I really like Gangs of New York, though.
Gangs of New York was pretty awesome, too.
Gangs of New York, to me, there was a lot of things that... Well, the fundamental problem with Gangs of New York for me is that every time DiCaprio is a great actor, but he was still kind of doing through that formation process with Scorsese. You know, that was the first. I think that was actually the first collaboration he did with Scorsese.
Who did Catch Me If You Can?
That was Spielberg.
Spielberg.
Yeah, that was.
But
that was
you know, every time DiCaprio was on screen with Daniel Day-Lewis, he just got fucking outclassed.
Daniel Day-Lewis,
it's really,
it just attracted the movie so much.
Yeah, fucking eye, man.
Yeah.
But so Gangs of New York is kind of a weaker film for me. Other weaker films like After Hours are down there. I would even put, even though I love the movie, just kind of as a guilty pleasure, Cape Fear is kind of on the low total.
Cape Fear was good for what it was.
Yeah, I mean, but that's another commercial attempt.
Yeah, it's another commercial attempt.
So yeah, Wolf of Wall Street would be somewhere in the middle for
middle
me.
Middle of the pack.
Yeah.
What about you, Sam?
I haven't watched as many Scorsese movies, but I would probably say, yeah, probably middle of the pack for me too. Goodfellas, Raging Bull are 1 and 2. I haven't seen Hugo yet, but I'm probably really going
to
like that.
Hugo's good, but to me, it's just, again, commercial.
I'm okay with that, because I love The Departed.
Well, I think, you know what, Scorsese does commercial, it's going to be 10 times better than when Spielberg does War Horse.
Or when Michael Bay does anything.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I like this one. I'm going to put this one up there.
Okay.
I'm going to put this one up there. I like Gangs of New York better than it.
I like Gangs of New York better than this too.
Better than this.
And the
see, I don't. And
I also like the Aviator better than this.
I don't.
See,
I don't
Aviator,
like,
I don't.
I
Aviator,
don't like the Aviator as much as this one.
Aviator's like Aviator. Good movie, but see, my problem was Cate Blanchett. And
she's a little odd.
She's always
but
little.
I like Cate Blanchett.
Wow. And you know, it's a great story about Howard Hughes, but I think it could have been better. But
yeah,
I think the ending could have been better.
I would have to say I like this movie better than I like The Aviator. I like this movie better than I like The Departed. I like this movie a lot, but it still gets a 7 just because
we know what Scorsese is capable of.
Oh, I can't wait to see the unedited version.
Yeah,
and if the unedited version comes out, let's watch it again and let's do a redo of this
like
podcast.
Like update. Now we'll all give it 10s.
There's so much possibility in this. Give me a fucking intermission, another hour of this stuff, and I will.
That would have been cool. I would have liked that.
I would have liked it. It would have been an interesting movie-going experience.
Grindhouse was a little bit over 3 hours.
It was two different directors.
I know, but Grindhouse was a little bit over three
Has
hours.
Has he done a movie with an intermission before, Mr. I, do you know? With the intermission?
No.
So that'd be really interesting.
Maybe I can't remember. Maybe The Age of Innocence had one in there. And I love that movie. I don't think it had one in there.
See, and this one, I like it a lot. It's just there are some things in there, and this movie has so much more potential.
Yeah.
But it's
but
still
see, I mean, but each Scorsese effort, I mean, it's just like we plot him, and he more often than not pulls it off.
Oh yeah,
I mean, he almost did it with Kundun. He almost did it with Last Temptation of Christ. It had not been for the shitty production values, and admittedly, David Bowie was a little bit distracting as Punch's
Mother.
But and then you know, and then when he tries to go overly commercial, that's when he runs into problems.
Would you rather him get the Best Director Oscar for The Departed or for this movie?
Quite frankly, I would rather prefer for this movie.
Me too. Hands down, actually, for me.
And is it the best movie of the year? No, because I think, based upon the movies I've seen this year, I haven't seen American Hustle yet. I haven't seen Her.
American Hustle.
I haven't seen some of the other films that are critically acclaimed, but I really do think that 12 Years a Slave is probably the best movie I've seen this year.
12 Years a Slave is...
It's going to win everything.
Steve McQueen is going to win the director. Okay, he has to win that.
12 Years a Slave deserves to win everything, but it's the
Academy Awards,
and they make weird decisions, like Crash.
Well, the only problem I have
fucking Shakespeare in Love over shit, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
I take that.
They make weird decisions. So,
well, if you think about when they gave it to Departed, it was so obvious. Here's that we'll finally give it to you.
I mean, that's
twice the Academy fucked up. Yeah. 1980, they gave Ordinary People, directed by Robert Redford, Raging Bull.
Uh-huh.
Who in the fuck remembers Ordinary People?
No one. No ordinary people.
Who the
people.
Fuck is Robert Redford?
And then 19.
Hey, that movie's supposed to be good.
The new movie that he did is supposed to be good.
The one where he's stranded.
But then in 1990, what? Dances with Wolves?
Yeah, that was over
Goodfellas? Come on.
Right.
Good. Dances with Wolves is a great Western.
Great Western, but that's about all it is. And I don't think it aged particularly well.
No, it aged horribly.
Especially when you're on the Hallmark Channel, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's when you fucked up.
I really think that if it was between The Departed for an Oscar or this for an Oscar, give the man an Oscar for this one. Because I think, and The Departed, if you watch the Infernal Affairs, it's almost,
Infernal,
the shots are very similar.
Infernal, yeah, he just took Infernal Affairs, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
But I do think Jonah Hill will win some awards for this, because
he should get
he's too fucking funny not to get it.
Yeah, he should get Best Supporting, because he did a great
job.
What
about over, you think he's going to get over Fassbender?
Ooh.
That's the problem. He's going up against Fassbender,
he
and perhaps
probably
Benedict
lose it to
Cumberbatch.
Fassbender because both of those people in 12 Years a Slave probably had a more robust performance. Jonah Hill's being
Jonah Hill's being funny.
Yeah, that's
Slave.
A good point.
Thank
that's
you,
a good
Mr.
point. Yeah,
but Michael Fassbender's gonna. I think he's gonna get that one. What about?
That's
you?
True.
Yeah,
yeah. If they do their job right.
Yeah, that's if they do the job right.
They do their job
Watch
right.
them not nominated for some dumbass reason.
Anyway, we got. We'll give. So Justin gave it a 9.5.
Yeah.
Mr. A gives it 8.5. I thought he was gonna give it higher.
Yeah.
Sam gave it an 8. I thought each of you would give it a 0.5 higher than what you actually said.
Well, no. Okay. See, if it were something like on the scale of Goodfellas, which it's not.
Oh, sure.
It would have gotten a 9. You got or
Goodfellas
is
fantastic.
Yeah.
This movie is definitely worth a watch. I think all of us recommend
Andy
watching it.
Andy gave it a 7.
A 7. And that's a strong 7.
Yeah, and Mr. B probably gave it something low.
He probably
below
gave it like a
5, 4. Probably.
Well, it's also
5 or below.
Yeah, yeah. I can see where it rubbed him wrong, too.
Yeah,
I think
too.
We all. Yeah, but definitely a watch from us. I'm looking forward
Check it out.
To watching. Guys, we only have one more semester here together. It's kind of depressing. But looking forward to
I know,
many
but
movies.
we got a lot of movies to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks, everybody, as always, for listening.
Thank you, Mr.
A.
Oh, yeah. I love doing this, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
And, you know, check out Wolf of Wall Street. It's a cool-sounding name, and it's a cooler-sounding joke. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.